We're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Chet Amud Bet. Gemara here is continuing to discuss the machloket that we saw yesterday between Rav Huna and Rav Chista about what the status of a kegris is. We know that below a kegris, we do not assume is dam hanida, but we're toleit in something else. Above a kegris, it's too big to be toleit be'ib macholet with the louse, and therefore we're going to assume, unless we have evidence to the contrary, that it is dam nida. Question is, a kegris itself, what's the status? We had the position of Rav Huna, which is a kegris, has the same din as above a kegris, and Rav Chista's opinion that kegris has the same din as less than a kegris. Here the Gemara says, Meitave, we have a question. Onto the top of Nun Tet Amud Aleph. Hayu aleha tipei damim lamata, v'tipei damim lamalo. So here we have a machloka between Rashi and Tosafot, how to explain this. Rashi says that the mato and the malo over here is the description of the size of the damim that they saw. So hayu aleha tipei damim lamata means she had spots or splatters of blood that was less than the size of a kugris, and she had splatters or splashes of damim that were above the size of a kugris. So Gemara says, Be'olyon ad kugris, the upper threshold is a kugris. My love, kugris milamato. So it sounds like a kugris says the same din as that which is below it, upholding the position of Rav Chista. It says, lo, kegris milamalo. It says that Belyom, the upper threshold, is until a gris. Doesn't mean that the gris is the same status as that which is below it, but rather until a gris. And a gris and above has the same din. That's the way that Rashi explains the Gemara, both the understanding of what the Braita is saying, as well as what the question was with regards to our Gemara. Tosafot asks a very simple question. Rashi, if you were to say large spots of blood and small spots of blood, would you use the term lamato or lamalo? No, you would use terms like gadol, katan. Lamalo and lamato are not terms that would be used in the context of big and small. And therefore, Tosafot says that lamalo mato is literally above and below, that she has spatterings or splashes of blood above her chagura, above her waistline, as well as spots of blood below her waistline. In the Braita, it says, Belyon ad kegris. The damim that are found below the waistline are protected by the damim that are found above the waistline. Because just like the damim that are found above the waistline, we're going to have to suggest or say that that dam came from some external source. So just like we're assigning the external source to the damim above, we'll say the same thing with the damim below the belt line, that even though there's more evidence or more reason to believe that that came from the woman herself, nevertheless, since we're already forced to say that some external blood got on this woman to explain the damim above her waistline, we'll say the same for that which is below the waistline. And the Gemara says, Be'elyon ad kegris, sounds like the upper damim will protect the lower damim up to a kegris. Now, up to a kegris sounds like it's referencing the blood down below the waistline. So up to a kegris, below the waistline, is protected by the damim that are found above the waistline, which means that it's only because of the damim above the waistline that the dam here is protected below the waistline. Now, had there been no dam above the waistline, even up to a kegris would be protected anyway, because we would assume that it came from a macholet, it came from a louse. So it must be over here that when we say kegris means a gris itself. That means below a kegris, down below, you wouldn't need the upper damim to protect it, because damim would be rendered Torah because it was less than a kegris. So what would you need the upper damim to protect? A gris itself. And that shows you that the din is like Rav Huna, that a gris itself has a din of Tumah, and that it's not like the damim that are below it, but like the damim above it. And that's why you need the upper damim to protect it, because without the upper damim, it would have been Tameh. Where it says, lo, that's not the case. Gris, over here, it's not talking about the size of the stain below, but rather the size of the stain above. And that is that the damim that is found on the upper half of her body has to be 3 grisim, 2 grisim, and a kegris, until we reach down to a gris. As long as the damim that are on the upper half of her clothing, meaning above her waistline, is greater than a kegris, then what's down below is protected, no matter what size it is. Now, obviously, down below is protected up to a kegris anyway. So it will protect above a kegris down below. And that is because if above the waistline it's more than a kegris, we have to assume that that blood came from something external. It came from an outside variable. Now, if it was up to a kegris, it could have been from a makol, it could have been from a louse. The fact that it's already greater than a kegris means that we must assume that there was external dam that came onto this beged. And since we're going to assume that for the damim above the waistline, we'll do the same for the damim below the waistline. But in that case, the kegris, we're counting down towards rather than up towards. In the first assumption, the first way we read it, we were saying, well, up to a kegris down below. Well, up to a kegris down below, we know is tahor even without the above. So it must mean that the mount or the issue that we're speaking about is the kegris itself. Over here, when we're counting down, we're saying it's 3 grisim, 2 grisim, up to a kegris has the same din as above it. Which means that in the upper damim, until you get down to a kegris, 3, 2, 1, all of those will protect the damim below. But when you reach a kegris, it will no longer protect. Why won't it protect? Because even if it was damim, even below the waistline, if it's kegris, we would assume that it's dam ma'acholet. And if it is dam ma'acholet, it's not protected because we no longer have evidence of the fact that the dam came from an external variable. It could have been it came from a ma'acholet. And therefore, the upper damim will no longer protect the lower damim. What you do see from here is that at the threshold of a kegris, we already say the damim above are no longer protective. That means a kegris itself is equivalent to less than a kegris. Because once you reach that threshold, we assume that nothing below is protected. And that would support the position of Rav Chisda. Now we're dealing with the new issue. Nimtza le'a kegris ve'od. Found on her beged, more than a kegris, a little more than a kegris. And that a little additional piece has a smushed louse on it. So Rabbi Chanina Omer Tmeya. Chanina says, it's more than a kegris, she's Tmeya. Rabbi Yonai Omer Tora. We have the evidence of what's here. We have a louse there. So Rabbi Chanina Omer Tmeya ki talya bekegris. Bekegris ve'od lo talya. We can only assign to a louse the amount of a kegris. Here where we have more than a kegris, it must be that the dam that is here came from herself and not just from the louse, even though we have a louse here. Rabbi Omer, Tehorah. When do we say that kegris is the threshold? That's when there's no evidence to the contrary that it came from something else. But over here, it's obvious. There's a smushed louse here. It's obvious that it came from the louse. So it's clear that that additional amount came from the smushed louse. If that's the case, Pashla Kegris, what's left behind is a Kegris. Rashi says over here that the Gemara is following the position of Rav Chisda, who the Halacha is like, that Kegris itself is Tahor, and that's why the Gemara is giving an example of Kegris Va'od in order to be Tamei. So over here, since there's only a Kegris left, like according to Rav Chisda, Kegris is already Tahor. Since if it was just a Kegris and not Kegris Va'od, we would assume that it's Tahor. So to over here, if we assign the little extra to the smushed louse, then the remaining kegris will have a din of kegris like anywhere else. So by Rabbi Yirmiya, it aska v'kegris, she was working with damim or something that was red, the size of kegris, nimtzalea kegris v'od, and then she finds on herself a stain that is the size of a kegris and a little more. Mahu, what's the din? Now the Reb points out that this question would be even true if she worked with something that was less than a kegris and ended up with more than a kegris on her. Because the question here is, what do we do in terms of taking away or assigning a portion of the stain here to something we know about? Is the din of the Chachamim about the threshold of a kegris absolute, irrespective of how any part of this kegris vote got there? Or is the din Chachamim only when we have no way to assign the dam to something? If we can assign a portion of the dam to something, the only thing we consider is the remaining damim that we can't assign. That's what Gemara says. Tibayla Rabbi Chanina. This would be a question in Rabbi Chanina's position. And Tibayla Rabbi Yana, it would also be a question within the position of Rabbi Yana. Tibayla Rabbi Chanina, we'd be uncertain as to what is in Rabbi Chanina's position. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Chanina atam. By the before, when we said that you have the kegris va'od and the macholot that is smushed there, there he says it's tmeyah. Although nitasko, because there she wasn't directly involved with something that could cause the stain. But over here, where she clearly was involved with something that could have caused the stain, therefore we assign that stain to the work that she's doing, and she no longer has a kagris. Or maybe you can even have the question posited within the position of Rabbi Yanai. He said above that it was Torah, if we have the macholot there. That's hanimila echad ritzufa bo macholot. That's only when there's a louse smushed on the beged. Over here, where we're just assuming that which she worked with is now what is staining her beged, not that we have absolute evidence, unlike the case of the louse where we have absolute evidence, maybe Rabbi Yanai would agree over here that we do not assign or assume that the contribution of the dam came from something other than herself. So here we have a question, whether according to Rabbi Hanina's position or Rabbi Yanai's position, this question remains. The Tashma, Yitaska ba'adom, ein tola ba'ashokhor. If she worked with the colors red, she can't say that if she finds black a stain on her beged, that came from what she was working with. Bimuat, if she worked with a small amount of damim, ein tola ba'murubah. She can't assume that if there's a large quantity of damim, that it came from the small quantity that she worked with. Hey chidami, what's the case here? Lav ki ha'gavno. Isn't it our case exactly? A case where she's working with less damim and ends up with a stain of more of a size greater than the damim she's working with. And therefore he would have an answer. The Gemara says, no. Case is gone, did aska b'kagris, v'nimtza aleha k'shnei grisim v'od. It's not simply where she worked with the grease and now finds a little more than a kagris on her. It's rather that there's a substantial difference. She worked with the grease and now she finds two kagrisin and a little more on her. So therefore, even if we were to assign fully the grease that she worked with to the external factor, there still remains here unexplained grease v'od. And that unexplained grease v'od would make her tamei'ah. But our question is raised in a case where it's kagris v'od, and she worked with the kagris, what's left over afterwards, independently, would not be mitamei this woman. Where it says, yochi, ma'ila memra. What's the question anymore? If you have two grease and a little more, and you take away one grease, you're still left with the grease v'od, which is tamei. So then why is there even a shiloh? Of course, in that case, she's tamei'ah. Where it says, ma'udutema shoku kagris tzipor. So what would you do? You have here two plus grisim. And we know that she worked with a bird that has kagris worth of damim. So now you'll say, okay, we'll assign a kagris of this two plus grisim to the bird. But you know we'll assign it. We're not just going to say one and then you're left over with one plus. Rather, we're going to say in the center of this stain, that's where the bird contributed its kagris. But that means on the right side and the left side of that stain, whatever's left over, each one is less than a kagris. And maybe she should be tehora. Meaning that how do you know where within the context of this stain is the red that came from an external source? If we say that it's in the middle, then the two sides have less than a shiur left on them. So Gemara says, kamashvalon, that we don't say that. When we say you have two plus and we take away one, you're left with one plus. We don't say that the one was right in the center. Say the one is to one of the sides, and the one plus is therefore adjacent or a single shi'ur, and she is tamei'ah. So therefore, in a case where we have kagris v'od, and that od we can attribute to a macholet, Rabbi Hanina is going to say that the woman is tamei'ah. You're left with a kagris. A kagris v'od makes her tamei'ah. The fact that there's a macholet here is not maleh v'morid. A macholet can only cover up to a kagris. What we have here is more than a kagris. The Din Chachamim is more than a kagris, she is tmeah, irrespective of whether there's a macholet here or not. Rabbi Yanai will say, well, the macholet we can assign to the beod. If we do that, then we're only left with a kagris, which we can't explain. A kagris that we can't explain is considered to be Torah, and therefore Rabbi Yanai thinks she is Torah. In the case or the instance where she worked with a kagris, and now we find a kagris beod, over there, we don't have an answer as to what Rabbi Hanina's position would be, or what Rabbi Yanai's position would be.
Amar Rava, nimtza leha min acher, tole bo kama minim.
Rava says if she finds one type on her, then she can assign many types to it. The way Rashi explains this is that if she finds something on her that's similar to a stain, kilo or a seraph,
some sort of eye makeup or sap. V'achakach matzal chalukah ketem. And then afterwards on her beged, she finds a stain. Afilu ein marito dome lo to min tolebo. Even though the stain that she finds now is not similar in color to the item that she was working with, nevertheless, she can assign the cause of that stain to the object she was working with. Tosafot, on the other hand, explains this, that if she found a certain stain above the belt line, then she can then say stains that are found below the belt line are caused by the same thing that caused the stain above the belt line. And that's even though there's a difference in colors or coloration between the stain above and below. Just like we're going to say that the stain above the belt line came from an external variable, and it's not her damim, so too we'll say about the lower stains, the stains below the waistline, even though they're not of similar type. That's the Ri's explanation of what it means that we're toleh minim harbe on min echad, whereas Rash explains, again, that toleh min echad, any stain on the beged, we will assign to finding of a stain of some item that causes a stain, but not exactly of the same color. Mara says, Meitave, the bright that we just saw before, Nit askar be'adom ein toleh bo shachor. She worked red. She cannot assume that a black stain came from the red that she worked with. It aska shiny. Mara says, what type of question is that? When she's involved or engaged with an item, that's different. Because over there, she worked directly with that color. And therefore, we say that if she finds that color on her beged, we assume it came from what she worked with. But then you can't say that there's a different color and we're going to assign it to the object that she worked with. That doesn't make sense. But in our case, what we're just assuming is if she finds a stain, we're going to assume it came from something. And therefore, just like we make assumption about this, we'll make assumption about something else. But we have no direct evidence that it came from a specific item or a specific color. So everything we're making is, every assumption we're making here is speculation. I speculate about it in one item, we can speculate that even though the color is different, the same is true about the other items. Nikadamre, another possibility to distinguish between the Braita and Rova's statement is, Amarova nit aska gamin echad tolebo kama minim. Meitve nit aska ba'adom en tolebo shachor. Kikar amarova ait aska betarna golet to itba kama minei damo. The other possibility of answering here is the distinction between Rova and the Braita is that Rova is talking about a case where the woman engaged or was working with a chicken. And working with the chicken, a chicken has multiple colors involved with it. And that's why you can assume that any color that's found on the beged came from the chicken. As opposed to the other case where she only worked with some item that has a singular color to it, you can't then assume any color that she finds on her beged will assign to that which she worked with. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Maisa bisha achat, which was the case with Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah. Va'atanyo. Don't we have a bright to lo amru chamim et adavar la'akel elachmir? Chamim did not speak about ktamim to make it into a kula, but rather to make it into a chumra. It's the exact opposite of what Rabbi Akiva says in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, he says, chamim made their drasha la'akel ve'lo la'achmir. Amaravina lo la'akel al divrei Torah, la'achmir al divrei Torah. Chamim did not come to be lenient on Divrei Torah, rather to be more stringent than Divrei Torah. Uktamim atzman derabanan. But nevertheless, the din of Ketam itself is a din derabanan. As Rashi points out, if it's a din derabanan, as linim benahu l'kula, but linim b'chol mideh. Since it's a din derabanan, we'll go to kula, and anything we can assign to the Ketam to, or assumptions or speculation we can make, we will say that because it's only a din derabanan. So in Ochanami, Ketam is a chumra al Divrei Torah. Because Divrei Torah say that Ketem is Torah and the woman herself is Torah. Nevertheless, Chamim were gozer by Ketem that she is a Nida. But when they were gozer, that was limited to times where we can't otherwise explain why she has a stain here. But if some way we can speculate about how the stain came about, even though we don't have evidence to that fact, that'll be enough to say that the Ketem is not problematic. So now the Gemara discusses the last line in our Mishnah, which is Rabbi Eliezer ber Rabbi Tzadok, Eid Shunatun Tacharakar. She has a cloth, a bedika cloth, under her pillow, and when she takes out the cloth, it has a stain on it. The question is, the shape of the stain, is the stain circular, or is the stain a streak? So Yibailu, Mi pligi Rabbanan aleid Rabbi Eliezer ber Rabbi Tzadok olo? Do Chachamim disagree or argue on Rabbi Eliezer ber Tzadok's position? Tashma, Ketem Aruch Mitztaref. A long ketem is mitzareif. Tipim tipim ain mitzareif. It's splatters or drops of damim. They're not mitzteref. Mani, who's the author of this breita? I Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, lama li tziruf. Why does he have to get to any shiur? Amar mashuch koshu tamei. He says that the reason by the aid, the bedika klot, that she's tamei is because there's a streak on there. A streak is evidence of the nature or the way by which she does the check. And if she pulls the aid to do the check, then when you have a streak on there, that's really evidence of the fact that there was damim there. But he doesn't require any minimum shiur. It's the nature of the dam on the aid. Lav Rabbanan. It must be explained by the Rabbanan. And that the Rabbanan require a minimum shiur. Shmamin apliyeh. So you see the Rabbanan do argue on Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. Because even in a case of a streaking, they still require a minimum shiur. And that's why it says mitztarfim. It says, lo, the old arm Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. Now that bright is authored by Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. V'chiyam Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, be'eid. Aval beketim lo. The distinction we can draw here is that the case in the Mishnah is a case of a bedika klot. In the case of bedika klot, there Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok says, if you have a streak on it, no matter what the size of it is, she's tmeah because that is the nature of how she would see a stain if she did a check and saw damim. On the other hand, when we're never going to get them, a stain on a baguette, over there, the streaking is not evidence of anything. It's the size of the stain that is the evidence, and therefore mitztarfim, he requires that minimum shiur in order to say that she is tmeah. So tashma. So we have a different answer. Dama Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Lochak, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. They paskin like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. Halocha, Nechlal de Pligei. If they have to pass an halacha like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, it implies that there are those that argue on him. So, k'shma mino, that the chachamim do argue on this position of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. Okay, now we'll begin the new perek. Isha shiosa tzerecha verata dam. So this is something we saw in the previous perek as well as earlier in the Masechta. A woman who is urinating and sees dam while she is urinating. Rabbi Meir Omer, imo medet. If she's urinating standing up, tmeya, then she is considered to be tmeya. Bim yoshevet, if she's sitting when she's urinating, then she is teora. Biosi omer, Rabbi Yossi says, ben kach teora. It's irrelevant. In either case, she is teora. Now another case, ish v'isha shesu tzarchayem, v'tocha seifel. You have a man and a woman who, standing up, urinated into a bowl. V'nimtza dam al hamayim, and then you see blood floating on the urine. Rabbi Yossi mitaher. Yossi says that the woman is tehora. Whereas Rabbi Shimon mitamei, shein derech ha'ish lotzi dam. There is no safek over here, because the blood certainly did not come from the man, because the man in general does not see dam when he urinates. Ela shechazkat damim in isha. The chazaka is that when you see dam in this case, the source of that dam is the woman herself. So now the Gemara asks, Maishna omedet, damrinan, what is the difference between whether she urinates standing up or whether she urinates sitting down? Maishna omedet, damrinan, meira glaim hadur limikor, when she's standing up, and because of the unnatural position of urinating standing up, it causes there to be pressure in that area, which forces the urine back into the uterus and flushes out the uterus, and the damim that comes out came from the mikor. So hadur limikor, v'aiti dam, yoshevet nami. Why don't you say the same thing when she's sitting down? Nema meira glaima dur limkor, that it went back into the uterus, v'aiti dam, and then it flushed out the blood from there. Why should there be any distinction between whether she urinates standing up or urinates sitting down? So mishmo bimazneket, it's a case where she urinates in a flow. Tumer says, mazneket nami, dilma boter detamu maya atadam. Even if she urinates in a flow, there's a possibility that at the cessation of the flow, then the damim, the blood began to come out. So Rabbi Abba, b'yoshevet al svat ha-seifel, u'mazneket v'toch ha-seifel. It's a case where she's sitting on the edge of the bowl, and she is urinating with a flow into the bowl. Nimza dam v'toch ha-seifel. Now the blood that she finds is inside the bowl itself. Dim ita debatu detamu maya ato. If it was true that the flow of blood happened after she had finished urinating, al svat ha-seifel yibayla elish tekuchay. We should have found the blood not in the bowl itself, but rather on the edge of the bowl. So Amar Shmuel, Amar Yilo, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Yossi, the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah, V'chein Uri Lei Rabbi Ava Lekalo, and so too, Rabbi Ava Paskin for Kalo, call the name of a person, Halacha k'Rabbi Yossi, that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in this case. So Rashi explains the Gemara here, that a woman who stands up cannot be mazneket. She cannot urinate in a strong or steady flow. Therefore, if the woman is standing up, there's pressure in the urination which causes it to drip out and doesn't allow it to come out in a flow. Therefore, it's forced back up into the uterus, and being forced back up into the uterus, it flushes out the dam, and the dam that we're seeing is likely coming from the mekor and not from a makah. On the other hand, when she sits down, she has the ability to urinate in a spurt. She urinates in a spurt, there's no longer that pressure which is forcing the urine back up to the mekor, and therefore the dam that comes out over here most likely is dam or blood from a cut or something in the urinary tract, and not something to do with the mekor, because the urine here is not flushing out the mekor. So then the Gemara says, okay, first question is, even by Yoshevet, you can see the same thing. If she doesn't allow the urine to come out in a spurt, it would also be forced back up into the uterus. So Gemara's first answer is, Enochanami, this is a case where she allows, when she's sitting down, the urine to spurt out. Where it says, well, even if she allows it to spurt out, when it comes to the completion of her urination, then also there's a possibility that what flowed out, or the dam that came here, was after her urinating. Who says it happened simultaneous with her urination, and it must have come from a cut? Maybe she urinated, and then after she finished urinating, she had a sighting of damim. Gemara creates a case by which the evidence, or the circumstantial evidence, is the fact that the blood came with the urine. The fact is that the dam is found inside of the urinary. It's found together with the urine, and therefore it must have come out together with the urine. Because had it been separate sightings, then the urine would have been down in the bowl, and the damim would have been up on the edge of the bowl because of the nature of the way that the woman is sitting on the bowl. That's the way Rashi reads it. On the other hand, Tosafot says that it's not necessarily true that a woman who stands up cannot be mazneket, that a woman who's standing up cannot urinate in a spurt. And the question of the Gemara revolves around the nature of the woman urinating. You have different factors that make it more likely to bring out the damim from the mekor. One of them is the fact that when the woman's sitting, it opens up her rechem. On the other hand, you also have the factor of mazneket versus shotetet. It's more likely that the urine will wash out the uterus in a case where it drips out rather than in a case where it comes out in a flow. So that's the question of the Gemara here. The Gemara says, well, when she's standing up, we say that the dam came from the mekor. Why? Because the urine that she urinated here was just dripping out, and therefore it caused pressure to bring out or flush out the uterus area. But that's even in the face of the fact that she's not sitting and her rechem is not wide open. When she sits down, enochanami, that she urinates with a spurt, but nevertheless, she now has something else that's a negative, which is that she opens up by sitting down. It expands the area of the uterus and makes more likely that the damim came out of the uterus. So you have one negative when she's standing up and one negative when she's sitting down. So just like by the negative when she's standing up, we say that the dam came from the mekor, say the same thing when she's sitting down. And the Gemara's answer is no, that all the cases here are cases of mazneket. The case here is that she's urinating with a spurt. And that means when she's standing up, she urinates with a spurt. And that tells us that when she's standing up, she's tameah, irrespective of the fact that, number one, it's coming out in a flow, and number two is that her rechem is not open. So that's not the factor that's determining. It's her fact that she's standing up, which is what causes the area to be flushed out, and nothing to do with whether she has one negative, two negatives. It's all about the standing up. And therefore, when she sits down, even though now her rechem is more open, nevertheless, that has no impact because she's sitting down. And it's the position that matters, not the other factors or other variables. The other thing Tosafot points out over here is that the next question, the Gemara, that after she finished urinating, maybe the damim came out. The way Rashi explained it, Tosafot says that's the incorrect explanation. It's not that after she completely urinated, then the damim flows out, but rather, even when a person urinates with a spurt, at the tail end of urinating, it still becomes a drip, and therefore it's shotetet. So even though she's mazneket, all mazneket, all flows end up with shotetet, end up with a drip at the end. If that's the case, it should also be flushing out the damim. So the Gemara's answer is, no, it's a case where she's sitting on the bowl, and the nature of where we find the damim, again, is circumstantial evidence to the fact that the blood came out with the urine and did not come because, or did not source from the mekor, from the uterus. So the Gemara says, Yibailu, Ishvi Shaumdim, if you have a man and a woman standing up urinating into a bowl, Mali Amir Rabbi Meir. What would be Rabbi Meir's opinion here? Remember, we had a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi in the Reisha, and in the Seifa, a machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir is not mentioned in that second case in our Mishnah. Gemara wants to know, what is Rabbi Meir's position with regard to that second case in our Mishnah? So ki amar Rabbi Meir b'chatzveiko. When does Rabbi Meir say that we assign it to the woman? That's only when there's one safek. A safek as to whether the dam came from the mikor or from a cut. But aval b'sfek sveka here, where there's two svekot, one safek of whether it came from the man or the woman. And if it came from the woman, maybe it was dam mikor, maybe it was dam makah. So there, lo mitame. And he would have a differentiated opinion. He would hold like Rabbi Yossi. Odum aloshna, or maybe it makes no difference. Reish Lakish hihi. Reish Lakish says Rabbi Meir's opinion is consistent. And Rabbi Meir thinks she is tmeya, whether there's a man involved or not involved. So mimai, how do you know this? Midalotani, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi mitarim. Because otherwise the latter half of the Mishnah should have said that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir are mitair. So what's interesting is, it also doesn't say Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Shimon mitamim. So how can you bring any proof from that? So Tosafot points out, because we know, we'll see later on in the Gemara, that Rabbi Meir's opinion cannot be consistent with that opinion of Rabbi Shimon, because later on it's clear that Rabbi Shimon even disagrees in a case of Yoshevet, and that would not accord with the position of Rabbi Meir. So we can never say that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon are over a single opinion. So if that's the case, why do we need the case of the ratio? Because in a case of Sveik Sveika, Rabbi Meir says you're Tameh, then obviously the case of the ratio is only one Sveik, he's going to be a Mitameh. So why do we need the case of the ratio at all? So Gemara says, we don't need the ratio, the first case in the Mishnah for Rabbi Meir, we need it for Rabbi Yossi, to tell you that even with a single Sveik, Rabbi Yossi is Mitaher. Before the Mishnah goes in and makes it into a case of one Sveik to teach you how strong the opinion of Rabbi Yossi is that he's mitaher even in a case of safek, then we go with sveik sveika. Let us say, or show us the case of sveik sveika, lodiyacha kocho de Rabbi Meir, to show you how powerful the position of Rabbi Meir is, that even in the face of a sveik sveika, he's mitameh. My answer is, koach de etero odi, that we always give precedence to showing the tzad, lahakel, the tzad heter. And over here, that's Rabbi Yossi's opinion. So therefore, the ratio of the mission talks about a case of a single safek. And despite the fact that it's a single safek, Rabbi Yossi is mitaher. And that is the most lenient opinion, and that's what the Mishnah focuses on. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Reish Lakish and says, Amar, ki kama Rabbi Meir b'chad sveika. Rabbi Meir only is mitameh when there's only one safek. Aval b'sveik sveika, if there's two sveikot, lo amar. He would agree to Rabbi Yossi's position. Amar says, im kein letnei Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yossi mitarin. That's the proof of Rabbi Reish Lakish. According to you, Rabbi Yochanan, why doesn't the Braita say that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi are mitarim? It says, Enochanami, it should say it, and does say it. V'aydeh desolik min Rabbi Yossi, patach min Rabbi Yossi. But because the latter opinion in the ratio of the Mishnah was Rabbi Yossi, it just said Rabbi Yossi's name in the second half of the Mishnah. But Enochanami, it also means Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi, b'chad sveika mitaher, sveik sveika miboi. Well, if Rabbi Yossi already in a single sveik is mitaher, then why do you have to tell us about a case of two sveikot? By sveik sveikot that he's mitaher. There's no chiddush in the position of Rabbi Yossi. It would make more sense to mention Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi says, no, ma'adu teimi, ha'ni mila di'avad. That I would have thought that Rabbi Yossi's opinion of being mitaher is only a case if after the fact you ask us, what's the din over here? We'll say that the safek is litaher. But if you come to us, l'chatchila, and ask us, can you be a suk b'tarot? After you have such a situation, may you go and touch the arot, we would say no. So the fact that the Mishnah now brings two cases where Rabbi Yossi's mitaher, it's come to teach us that Rabbi Yossi's opinion is even lechatchila. Even if you ask us, after you have such a safek, we're going to say to you that safek is so kol kach tohor that you can go and work with tarot without any question. So that's what the Kamash Malan is, that it mentions Rabbi Yossi in the Seifa, even though it's unnecessary to teach us that, it's even a din lechatchila according to Rabbi Yossi. So Tanya Kavetet, Rabbi Yochanan, a braita that supports Rabbi Yochanan's understanding in Rabbi Meir. Ish v'ishasha sutar chehem, man and a woman who are urinating letocha seifel into a bowl, nimza dam ala mayim, and you see blood floating on the water. Rabbi Meir, v'Rabbi Yossi mitarin, Rabbi Shimon mitamei. So here you see Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi both being on the tzad letaher, which is similar to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Now the Gemara asks, according to Rabbi Shimon, Yivailu Ishai Yoshevet, Mali Am Rabbi Shimon. What would Rabbi Shimon say in the case of a woman who is sitting on the bowl and urinating, and then we see damim in the bowl? Ki Am Rabbi Shimon Beomedet. Is Rabbi Shimon's opinion in our Mishnah, which is a case where the man and the woman are standing, that's where Rabbi Shimon says his opinion that we automatically assume it came from the woman because of the case situation which says that there's pressure there because of her standing up, and that what causes the mekor to be flushed out. But aval yoshevet, if she was sitting, he would not say that. Lo, odil malo shnar, maybe it makes no difference. Tashma detanya, we have a brayta yoshevet tola. She's sitting down, she can be tola in the urine or a makah by the urine. Omedet, she's standing up. Eino tola, we assume that damim came from the mekor. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's like Rabbi Meir's opinion in our Mishnah. Biosi Omer, ben kach tola. Rabbi Meir, we'll see, like in our Mishnah, says it's irrespective whether she's standing or sitting. We can always be tola that the damim came from a makah, not from the mekor. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ben kach, eina tola. Irrespective whether she's standing or sitting, she may not be tola, meaning that she is Tameya in both of the cases, and that's the answer to our question, that in a case where she sits down, Rabbi Shimon believes she is Tameya, arguing on both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir. So Mara says, takes it the next step, and says, Yibailu, according to Rabbi Shimon, Ish v'isha yoshvin, you have a man and a woman sitting down on a bowl. Maliyama Rabbi Shimon, what would be Rabbi Shimon's opinion in this case? So again, we have different stages. We know Rabbi Shimon's opinion from a Mishnah is a case where a woman is standing up. By a woman standing up, Rabbi Yossi says, by a man and a woman standing up in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says, the woman is Tmeya, because that's what we say, that we assume that the dam came from the woman. So now the Gemara tinkered with one of those issues, which is, what happens if it's a case where the woman is sitting down? There's no man involved, but the woman's sitting down. The Gemara concluded that there, that Rabbi Shimon also is Mitame over there. Again, you could say that's because in both of these instances, there's really only one safek. And that is because in the case where she's sitting down, there's only one safek. Is the dam from the makor, the dam from her urine? And so therefore, Rabbi Shimon is going to be a machmir. Same thing with the case of the man and the woman standing up. The man and the woman standing up, the woman is no longer besafek. Because when she stands up, then the damim definitely came from the uterus, because that's what happens when you stand up and you urinate. And the man is irrelevant, as Rabbi Shimon points out, because the man doesn't have damim. So in both of those cases, there's only a single safek. Now, but what happens over here in a case where ish v'isha yoshvim, the man and the woman sat down to urinate on the bowl? Mali Amar Rabbi Shimon, what would be Rabbi Shimon's opinion? Kikam Rabbi Shimon omedet didachik lo alma. When she's standing up, that's because there's pressure in the system, and that's what's bringing out the damim. Vioshevet, or a case where she sat down, the chad safek. Over there is only one safek. Of all the safek's fake over here, we have a double safek. Number one is, did it come from the man? And number two is, for the woman herself, when she's sitting down, there's still a safek of where it came from. So lo amar, maybe over there Rabbi Shimon agreed that she is Torah. Odom alo shtar, maybe it makes no difference. Tashma, kevin dam Rabbi Shimon chazkat damim min aisha. The opinion of Rabbi Shimon is premised on the fact that there is a chazoka that whenever you have the sightings of dam, it came from a woman. Lo shna omdim, lo shna yoshvim. It makes no difference whether standing or sitting. It's as if the man is irrelevant in these cases, as if the man doesn't exist, because damim come from the woman, not from the man. If that's the case, the only consideration here is the woman. And we already said in Rabbi Shimon's opinion, it makes no difference if the woman is standing or sitting. Because there's only a single safek then, and that single safek, we say that the damim came from the woman. All right, we'll read the Mishnah now, and we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. Hishila chalukah l'nachrit o l'nida. Woman lent her beged to a non-Jew or to a nida. And then, afterwards she wears it and she finds a stain on it. Harzeu tola ba. We can assign or assume that the stain came from the woman who was a nida, or the nachrit. Because in both of those cases, you do not hurt the woman who we are assigning the ketem to. The woman who is wearing the begin now, if we say she is Torah, and the ketem belonged to one of these other two women, neither of these women is detrimentally affected by the fact that we say that the stain came from her. If we say that the stain came from the nida, she's already Tmeya, she's already a nida. So saying that the ketem is hers is no big deal. As well as the fact that if she's a nachrit, the fact that we say that she had the ketem is hers is in Maleo Marid. Nachrit has a din of Tumami Drabanan, and whether she has a sighting or not is irrelevant because there's no din of Nida by a Nachrit. So over there we're going to say that the woman who's wearing the beg now is Torah, and we will assume that the ketem came from one of these other two women. But on the other hand, if you have Gimel Nashim Shalavshu Chaluk Echad, three women that wore a single beged, and obviously it was not checked in between, or they sat on a single wooden bench, and then they find dam on it. In that case, every one of them is tamei. Truthfully, the stain probably only came from one of the women. But how can you say one of the women is more likely to have the stain than any of the other women? They all have the equal possibility that the stain came from them. And if we assign the stain to one woman, she becomes Tameya, and she's detrimentally affected by that. for the benefit of the other two women. So therefore, we make all the women tmein, because we have no way to distinguish between them. And same thing with the safsal. And that distinction is because, and so therefore, the difference between the case in the ratio of the Mishnah and the safety of the Mishnah is, in the ratio of the Mishnah, we can make the woman Torah by assigning the ketan to someone else who is not impacted by assigning it to them. It's irrelevant to them if it's assigned to them, and therefore we can say the woman who found the ketan is Torah. On the other hand, in the latter case of the Mishnah, where the three women, if you assign the ketan to one woman, she is detrimentally affected, and at her expense, we're going to hire the other women, and we won't do that, and therefore all three of them are tmein. Yeshvu al safsal shel evan, the three women sat on a bench made out of stone, or itzdeba shel merchatz, or one of the pillars of the bathhouse. In that case, if there's a stain that is on that bench or on that pillar, Rabbi Nechemiah says that these women are teorim. Shehaya, Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, this is what we just quoted 2 days ago in the daf, kodavar sheinu mekabel tuma, inu mekabel ktamim. Any item that is not mekabel tuma is not evidence of a ketem. A stain only has impact if it's found on something that is mekabel tuma, not if it's found on something that is not mekabel tuma. The Gemara will discuss the reasoning behind Rabbi Nechemiah's opinion, and we're going to stop over here.